I'm Vic Cohen, and it's a fair question. It's a fair question. It's a fair question. I'm Vic Cohen, and it's a fair question. It's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair question. I'm Vic Cohen, and it's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair question. Hello, this is Vic Cohen broadcasting live from gorgeous Skid Row Studios in downtown Los Angeles, California. The name of the show is It's a Fair Question because, well, on this show, every question is a fair question. There is absolutely no question, that's right, no question that is ever too personal or ever off limits. And tonight is a huge show for us because sitting across from me about two feet, two and three quarters inches, very close. It's a tease. You're so close yet so far. You're almost within grasp. Is a man that I've been wanting on the show since we first started, and I was just thrilled to find out he could join us tonight. You know him, you've seen him, and there's a lot you don't know about him, and that's what we're also going to talk about tonight. I'm talking about the one and only Cato Kaelin.
Love him.
You do love him.
Well, I'm him.
I've noticed you've not been able to keep your hands off yourself.
I know. Well, you're 3 feet from me. I'm glad we can keep your hands from me.
Actually, I should say, yeah, and I've been struggling to get him close to you. You are a good-looking man. You must get a lot of women.
Well, you know, it's great that I got here early and you and I got to take a stroll with Jeremy, the owner of the studios, and just walk the streets of downtown L.A.
It was Skid Row,
which, by the way, it's really not that skiddy.
Let's talk a little bit about Brian Gerard Kaelin. I love that's your real name.
Yeah, Brian Gerard Kaelin. Cato actually is a name given to me from my parents. My brother's is Cato. Cato Kaelin because of the Green Hornet. And I took karate and we'd also fight karate. And so Cato is my legal name now too. And it has been my legal name since about 7 years old.
Now, a lot of people don't know that who you've been portrayed from the O.J. Simpson trial is really not who you are at all.
With the performances by other actors.
Now, yeah, and just in case the one person who doesn't know Cato, how he first came to be known, he was involved with the O.J. Simpson trial in that he was, Cato, you were the house guest of O.J. Simpson.
Right. House guest sounds like it's an employee job. I basically had a room. The house was gigantic. I had a bungalow, and it was wonderful. It's what people, when they move out, they want to live in a guest house of a star. They love guests. People would come up to me during this time going, where can I get a place like this? Because it's beautiful. And yeah. Then, you know, I kept thinking, what a great thing that I should be. There's this thing called the guest house suites. And I kept going, are they going to call me to be their spokesman? They haven't.
Well, just to refresh everyone's memory, back in 94, O.J. Simpson was put on trial for murdering his wife Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman. Mm-hmm. At that time, Cato was in the back house at the time of this murder. I'd say alleged, but we know it was a murder. And there have been two trials. There was a civil trial, which was held by the Goldmans. Mm-hmm. And was it also?
The Browns too.
And that was the second trial, which you testified at. And in that trial, the jury found him, O.J. Simpson, guilty. And prior to that, there was the state's case. And in that case, that's where O.J. was found not guilty.
Correct.
And
which was the first one.
The very first one,
It was like the second one was the do-over.
Correct.
Which nothing could happen. You could go bankrupt or whatever.
So do you think they got it right the second time?
My opinion is, strictly my opinion, whatever it matters, is yes, they did get it right the second time.
And where did they go wrong the first time?
Well, I think the first time was L.A. was there was a Rodney King. There was so much, I think, black and white. There was the difference between them. And part of the trial was when they... I was there sitting during my testifying, and he'd walk in a courtroom and he would wave to the jury.
This is O.J.,
and they'd wave back, and it was celebrity at its best, where they not intimidated, they were in love. I could see it on most of the jury that they loved this O.J.
Kind of like how I was when you walked in.
True. Did I do anything? By the way, I did not touch anybody, and I did not inhale.
So you're there as a witness,
yeah,
just in court, because you're eventually going to be brought up to the stand, and you're looking at this, and did that seem odd to you?
Well, I was there 6 days, but I...
And this is the first trial we're talking about.
The first trial, 6 days, but I'm also there on hold. Okay. So you're in the holding room is not even, it's about a quarter the size. It's like you're in a closet.
And just for all of you to be 100% clear, the first trial was kind of the bombshell trial. This is the one with Marsha Clark.
It's the trial of the century. It's labeled as the biggest trial with cameras in the courtroom. To put it in perspective, this is, Vic, is CNBC started, Court TV started, MSNBC started. Every lawyer got a show from one trial. And I've said this on many shows. I said crime does pay because it became a billion-dollar industry. Not only that, CSI started. All the shows, the spinoffs, were because of the Simpson trial.
Why was O.J. Simpson found innocent or not guilty? You're saying it's because the jury in the first trial was infatuated with stardom?
Well, the jury is the one that came up with the verdict, but I'm not a lawyer, but I, from other lawyers, and now that I've had made so many friends with lawyers, basically they would say that the prosecution didn't present the case the right way, and there was a lot of evidence they should have brought in. This is, once again, other talking heads. The first time in my life in a courtroom, no parking tickets, I'm in a double homicide case. First time ever. And it was, my life became public. I was a public figure, and everything, whatever I've done, was everybody could just find out anything about me, which I don't think there was anything that was bad about me, but still it was, you know, it was tough to come from Wisconsin and, never not really kind of being loved and had a lot of friends, to seeing after the trial what hate was all about. Some love me and some hate me, and it was god awful.
And none of them knew you. This was based on
the TV and what once you're labeled something, you can't fight it, because the more you fight it, it seems, you know, the Cato the freeloader, Cato never works, Cato, he is the biggest loser. And it's, this happened for years, and it was always repeated in the news. At first, it was really a positive. And by the way, this had nothing to do with no doing of my own. If I was spotted somewhere, I didn't say, photographers, take a picture. If I was, the more they did, it made you really popular. And then they would, you could see it. They wanted to turn it like, okay, enough Cato, let's destroy him. And I saw it happening. I felt it happening. And I did not become the different person from that. It was how the media wanted to use me as this, a pawn.
Well, the amazing, do you feel used then?
Yeah. Back then.
Do you feel used now from it?
No. I don't. You know what? Vic, I don't know. I'm sure you're the kind of guy that's got very, very close friends, a group of friends that you probably had for many, many years. I've got a set group of friends. I made a ton of friends that are really good people, but the ones that really stuck by me are my friends. And I came from a very large family.
How big?
They know. We had seven.
Including you?
Yeah.
Seven brothers and sisters.
Yeah, we had the siblings were four brothers. One brother died, but we had six now.
How did that happen?
Oh, it was a birth.
Oh, okay.
But it was a brother. That's sad. He lived for like a month. Oh. But we had, this was, to explain to my mom, because my father had passed away by that time, thank goodness.
Why do you say thank goodness?
Well, I think my father would have just, the way my mother reacted to the news and people making fun of me, it just is just emotionally, she was a wreck.
Because that's her baby.
Exactly. She just, crying phone calls. What do they say about you? I would just tell her, do not watch TV. Don't watch these shows. But it was on a year and a half.
It was on every day. Your mom was in Milwaukee, where you grew up.
So, you know, it was the Entertainment Tonight. It was at that time, Current Affairs and whatever.
Now, you were divorced at this time, correct?
Well, that's a whole other story. I wasn't even, I had no...
Like, was your
no
ex-wife loving
it
this?
It wasn't really what... It was sort of like having an annulment. It's like a do-over. It wasn't... She's a terrific person.
So you guys
but
had...
But it wasn't, you know, it was not a marriage like I think people are thinking.
Okay, because
like,
in all the bios, you know.
I was like, this isn't me.
Well, I was just thinking
I waited, by the way. I was a virgin.
To get married?
Fact. Yeah.
And you married at,
well,
what, 13?
I was very Catholic. I was raised...
Are you Catholic?
Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting. Here's the thing about Cato. He is the complete opposite of what you imagine. Okay, so he got married as a virgin. I would have never guessed that. You do drugs?
No drugs.
Ever done drugs?
Never did drugs.
Do you drink?
I can have a glass of like a Pinot Noir. And the funny thing is, I can only have that because, and I always stress this point, I hate when people go, well, I'm gluten-free, I'm this. I actually did the blood test. I can't have certain things because I'm a migraine sufferer. I'd love to have a beer, but I can't. I get I get like these stage 9 behind my left eye migraines. So it's a blessing. It's a curse. And alcohol, I kept, if I had anything, I would get so sick. I never really drunk. I would just, so I said, I can't drink. So I could have a glass of peanut wine. I've never been a big drinker.
Never tried marijuana.
The drug. Never tried pot.
Coke?
Nope, no Coke.
Heroin?
Nope. That was a big step.
Suddenly you're back on the stand.
Drano one time, and you didn't tell me how to swear in on your show. You know, is there? Hold on. No, there's no Bible.
Is it a a choice because you want to stay healthy? You're scared of death, or what is it?
No, it was a thing. So funny is that because when I was growing up, my brothers, I was this guy. If I saw my brothers, I was the youngest brother. So when I saw my brothers drinking, or if I saw my family drinking, I would kind of freak out, like, don't do this. Don't become something different. Because at the time, I saw some of our neighbors who got drunk and violent, and people would make fun of the drunk people. So I kept telling my mom, don't drink, please don't have drink. As a kid, I'd wait up for them at night and go look through the window, like, are they home yet? And it was, I just would freak out. So I think part of that was psychological going. And then my brothers, when I saw my brother had smoked pot, I went nuts. Because, you know, in my head, I'm thinking, this is going to die.
Were you a hall monitor in school?
No hall monitor.
What were you in high school? What kind of kid were you?
I was definitely an athlete.
Really?
I tried to become a pro ball player. We took our team to state in baseball, and I was the pitcher. I was the quarterback. It sounds impressive, but I was homeschooled. I had to throw that joke in there because that's just part of the routine. Mom, go deep. We have a big game today. We're playing dad. It's homecoming week and break.
you know what? You got me. You drew me in.
No, but I was all those things. I wanted to become a baseball player. And the next thing I knew, I played at Wisconsin Eau Claire, the second biggest school. And I made the varsity my freshman year.
Second biggest school in Eau Claire.
In Eau Claire, in Wisconsin. And so yeah. I did the... I said, God, I got to move to California because this guy, Augie Garrido, was coaching Cal State Fullerton, and I decided to go to Fullerton. I tried out. I didn't really try out. I went to the practice, and I didn't get whiskers really till I was about 33, 34. These guys were gigantic, and that was Mark McGuire played at USC, but I saw a scrimmage, and I was like, oh, my God, these guys are good.
What position?
Pitcher.
Really? Yeah. Wow. How fast could you throw the ball?
89.
That's fast.
89 miles an hour. I did a jugs machine, and it clocked me, man.
Let's talk about, so you're living in this guest house. How did you even get into OJ's house as a guest, you know, in that separate house?
It was a Craigslist. I actually had mentioned that I was looking for a Simpson, Jessica. I got the wrong ad. Next thing you know, it was Bart and Homer. Kato, let's do the show, Vic. It was, it's a funny story. You be the judge of that.
I will.
I had a casting business with a gentleman who was on a soap opera called General Hospital. He and I started a business, and the business became semi-successful, and we just decided to take a vacation together and said, let's go to Aspen. We'll drive. He goes, everybody goes to Aspen during Christmas. And it was new to me. We drove, had an absolute ball, and Nicole was there, divorced from OJ. He had known Nicole, the gentleman, my friend, and they hit it off, and she fell in, you know, really liked him. And the next thing you know, they got back together in L.A.
What year is this?
This is 93.
Okay.
1993, and they got together and started to date a little bit. Now, I was the third wheel on dates, but I was the person that kind of made the jokes and was funny, and I lived in Hermosa Beach at the time. We had a party where
Nicole... Now, that is the stereotype of Kato Kaelin.
Living at the beach. And... but Hermosa Beach, it was a wonderful time. Came up to her house to a big party. She had a gigantic guest house not connected to her house. And I said, who lives there? She goes, no one. I said, and I paid the rent. I said, can I move here? Because driving up to, we did movie sets and we did all the castings for any extras. Like we'd cast 100 people one day and 200
You and your
day.
Partner who was
My
dating
partner,
Nicole.
And we get a percentage of everything. So Nicole said yes, and she had known me for probably a month, and
but
had
how
an
did
ball, and then that was it. And then OJ and her started dating after the other two broke up, and I think he had checked out who I am.
Just so I'm clear, hold on, I want to back this up for just one moment. The guest house that Nicole invited you to stay in that you had questioned about, is that the one in OJ's property?
No.
That was at her home?
On Gretna Green Street in Brentwood. So okay. Gretna Green, she had a beautiful home.
Yes, I drove by that after the crime scene because I had to see. I mean, you know, it was such big news.
Well, Gretna Green was not part of the...
Oh, was this... Okay, that was the second
after
one.
After, she lived in Bundy's where the crime
scene... That's where
yeah,
I
yeah, yeah. Gretna Green's okay. different in Brentwood. So anyways, that's how it happened. And then the kids at the time, I guess they kind of fell in love with me because I was fun to be with. And it's so funny because growing up at that time with the children, it was the Kardashian girls and the Sydney Simpson, Justin, used to jump on my bed in the guest house to wake me up. And I'll never forget, it was Kim Kardashian and Khloe and Courtney, and they're all, everybody was friends. And Nicole would jog with Chris and, you know, back in 93, every day they'd go jogging.
But this time Chris Kardashian is yeah. married to Robert Kardashian, or are they divorced?
Divorced.
Okay.
Divorced, but all friends. So that was what it was like growing up in the Brentwood for me, for them. And then they got a dog, and I knew it was a, like I said, it's like Cato, they didn't love you, but it was a thing of all love because they named the dog Cato. And,
okay.
And that was the famous Akita.
And that was the dog that was howling. That was truly, yes. they say, the witness to the crime at Nicole Brown's.
Exactly.
So what about the rumors that Chris Kardashian had an affair with OJ?
Yeah, I've heard those rumors. They're just rumors, I imagine. Who knows what's true?
Were they too close in your mind?
No. I never saw that. You know, Vicky, I really didn't hang out with that crowd. I lived there, but it wasn't my hangout. It wasn't. Okay. I had my own set friends, and I sort of had like the view from a room of what was important. And let's face it, Brentwood, money is very important. Money is what is really important. And I saw that as being the ruling factor in relationships.
Now, you're the jumping on the bed, waking you up, dog being named. Is that when you were living at Nicole's?
Gretna Green.
Okay. And then how did you transfer over to OJ's guest house?
Nicole had got a new place on Bundy and said, you can move into the house there. And I didn't think it was right to move into the house there. And I was going to move out. And I had become friends with OJ again. He just said, no, just go. You can move in. I've got a bungalow. You can just have it there. Have your place there.
How big was the bungalow?
Oh, it had a kitchen in it. It was 700 square feet, maybe.
Okay.
You know, and access to the pool area, that whole, you know, it was beautiful.
Separate bedroom?
It wasn't connected to his house.
But in that suite, as we call it, you had your own bedroom with a living area and a separate kitchen.
Yeah, no, very small. It was like being at a Marriott's suite. And what do you call those? The Courtyard Marriott.
Yeah, okay.
That's what it was, just like that.
And then you had the doors that would open up to the pool?
Yeah, the doors. That was my front door.
What were you paying in rent?
Well, the rent was, OJ said, whatever I wanted to pay. I offered rent every month to OJ, and he said, don't worry about it. But I was offered. I came off as this freeloader guy. Every month, I offered OJ money, and he would just say no. And I only lived there 6 months.
Okay.
And the last month that I was there, I got a place on San Vicente where I was going to move out, and then the life changed.
That is unbelievable that you were living rent-free, yet look what it cost you. I mean, there's some irony
that
there.
That was a big commercial break right there.
After this.
No, it's no commercial.
No, but isn't that something?
Yeah, it really is.
I guess they say that, you know, there's no such thing as free at the end.
Yeah, that's another good saying.
Thank you. I've got several of them. What kind of, I know that he wasn't technically a roommate, but you did see him on the property from time to time.
Well,
kind of landlord was he roomie or whatever?
I know it was one of these things where very charismatic. I'm a huge football fan. I'm a huge Green Bay Packer fan. I had friends over watching the game. I could count maybe in the 6 months seeing him 12 times max. Don't forget, he was doing sports with NBC.
Okay.
And he traveled to, I think he was the voice of doing Notre Dame games, if I remember right. So he was gone a lot during the time that I lived there and never really around.
Were you infatuated with him and his magnetism?
No.
Did you see him as a big star in any way?
No, I saw him as a football star. That's really about it. I was going to film premieres way before I became famous. Excuse me. The thing was, when I go to movie premieres and the red carpets that I'd be at, after I went to red carpet events, people thought, oh, there's Cato again. But they didn't understand. I went to these way before, but now I was known, and it was like, oh, now I got to become an introvert. But I was going to mention that we were just the thought you had, which,
What about the no such thing as free?
No. Right after that, it was a really good point I was going to make, and for goodness
about
sakes.
About being roommates, but you weren't technically roommates, and then you asked if you were infatuated with him.
No, I think the culture was, I went to a football game, a Raider game, and I saw the the crowd, how they would just go crazy for OJ, and explain that crowd going, OJ need autographs, and it made sense there in the Bronco chase of how they held up signs like go juice, go, before any of the evidence came out.
Right.
And how it came, how people, when he was at a game, how they fell in love with him. And then during the Bronco chase, it was like another football game. But
and for those of you who don't remember, when OJ said he was going to turn himself in, instead he jumped into his white Ford Bronco and took a joyride. Although AC Collins was, I think, was behind the wheel, and yeah. OJ allegedly, supposedly, was crouched behind him with a gun. Is that right? Or was it OJ driving AC was on the phone?
I think AC was on the I think it was AC driving. If I remember right.
Okay.
And OJ was crouched and on the phone. I remember the game being broken up between the Rockets and the Knicks. And
so you watched that live, like all of
us. Yeah, I was with some buddies.
What were you thinking when you watched that?
Boy, it was just a very surreal of how the. I think in my heart, I felt like this is like a history thing happening, and it was like never has something like this happened before. And then when I heard people pleading, don't kill yourself, OJ, don't kill yourself, in my head I was thinking, there's no way he's going to kill himself. I think, why did you think that? I think it's because he loved himself so much. And I think he had he does have an incredible ego. And I just think it was a ploy.
How did you see that ego demonstrated?
Well, I just... The times I was around him, I think he thinks he could have anything. I think he was the kind of guy that wanted a wife and other women. Once again, this is all my opinion, but this is, I think...
You saw him cheating on Nicole?
No, I didn't see cheating.
Well, when he got back to Nicole with Nicole, you were around.
Yeah, completely. And if they ever got into an argument, I never saw anything violent with hitting. But when they did get in an argument, I always mentioned to them, I go, you guys don't fight. You should kiss each other. It was how I saw my parents all the time. I tried to relate that. You guys should hug, be in love.
When you say your parents, are you saying that your parents would argue, or that your parents...
My parents always... I never saw my parents not being in love. I never saw them not kissing. I never saw them being affectionate. And I said if they ever had an argument, my father or mother would always end up with a kiss. So it worked for them. Why not try it for OJ and Nicole and say, you guys just don't fight over something.
So you said you only saw OJ maybe 12 times.
Maybe about 12, yeah.
But there was enough something going on between himself and Nicole for you to have to say that at least once.
Yeah, I think they had silly arguments that were, like I said, I can't remember. Maybe it'd be over popcorn or something. I'm just saying, it's like, you know, come on.
Were you sitting in 12? The room with them, like watching TV or something?
Well, if the kids came over, they always gravitated towards me and would hang out. And just like, we're going to play with Kato. If I was outside, it would just be hanging with them. And then I would see, obviously, they'd come outside also. It wasn't me. If I was just outside, they'd come out. It wasn't me trying to hang out with them.
So did you think OJ was in love with Nicole? Were they acting like
I think he's in love. I think it was definitely in love, but I also think it was you can't have your cake and diet too. You know, it's one of those things.
You think he wanted to own her and have other women?
I believe so. I mean, I think that a guy who had a lot of power wants more than one woman, maybe a mistress or, you know, I think he was dating someone else at the same time. If I remember, her name was Paula, but I don't know if that was during Nicole or not.
You probably had a strong connection with Nicole because she was really your first friend. She's the one who brought you into that friendship with OJ.
Yeah, and I was a crazy runner also. I didn't really run with her. She ran with her girlfriends, but I was, back then in the day, I did like 6 marathons and I would run every single day. And now I don't, but...
When did you first hear about Nicole being murdered? How'd that come about?
It came about with me being in the OJ's house with the detectives who came to the door like at 5 in the morning. And
so you're sleeping, you get a knock on the door?
Knock on the door, but you know, they said, I saw 4 guys outside, and the night before, it was just already a really strange night for me with talking to this girl, and I thought I heard noises, and it was just like bizarre, and she wanted me to come to her place to sleep the night, and I said, just come on over here. Because I wanted my way too. So, and I didn't feel like driving. So it ended up that she didn't come by. And I just remember the knock at the door and it was 4 guys. And they asked me, I said, come on in. And they, you know, I was groggy and they asked me what I wore, my clothes that I wore last night. And they were hanging on a chair. I said, over here. And what shoes did you wear? And they looked at my shoes and I was saying everything okay. And immediately to me, I thought a plane crash. I don't know why. I just thought I knew he flew to Chicago. Is everything okay? And then they got Arnell Simpson in the other bungalow. And we were in the, they brought us into the main house. And that's when we found out the detective had to call the Browns and say their daughter had been murdered.
So you're sitting in the living room of
But I was hearing it. I wasn't part of the conversation. We could hear.
You and Arnell.
Detective. Yeah. Arnell was, I think, originally supposed to say it and she couldn't. So the detective took the phone.
So just so I'm clear, Arnell already knew and you didn't, or?
Yeah, I believe Arnell already knew.
And you didn't, and you overheard the call to the Simpsons. Nicole Brown's
family.
Mother? Father? Sister?
Well, I was on the phone, but it was the family. I think it was probably the father.
What are your first thoughts when you hear OJ's been is involved, or that she has been murdered?
Devastation. Couldn't believe it. And I thought it was just a freak act. You know, she got murdered, but nothing to do with OJ at the time. And then, little by little, that's why they're there.
Never crossed your mind?
No. They crossed my mind in saying when they asked me to walk through the kitchen and said, "Be careful of the blood," and then I knew.
What about the McDonald's run the night before? Now, you said that you...
Are we going to talk about other stuff too, Vic?
Yes, we are, but I'm so fast, I promise we will move on. We're going to move on.
I hate reliving, actually. I try to go beyond this because it's really, it's a psychological thing. It's almost 20 years, and I try to get rid of it in my... I'll always have it, but I don't like going back to that place. But real quickly, you asked me, what was the... Oh, the McDonald's
run. Did that seem weird to you? Because you only seen him 12 times, to be...
Well, no, he came to my door, which seemed weird. He said if I could break change for 100, and I didn't have that change, and I had $40. I gave him $40, and I had run about 15 miles that day, and I played basketball, and I was starving. And he said, "I'm going to get something to eat." And I invited myself, said, "Could I come?" And at that time, who knew it was going to happen, right? That I invited myself, and I'm sure that screwed up all his timing.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
I know he's not a roommate, but were there funny things like the guy's always surfing the channel? You know, like those annoying roommate type things?
No, because I wasn't his roommate. I had the guest house. The only time was I had my buddy of mine, Will. He came by, and we're diehard Packer fans, and we watched the Packers play the Lions in a playoff game, and we're watching in my bungalow on a smaller TV.
Right.
And he came by and said, "You guys go in the house and you guys watch the game in the big TV." And then my buddy and I are very loud during Packer games, and he couldn't believe how much we knew about football. And that was probably it. He was just cracking up at our stuff. Like, come on, Sterling Sharp was playing at the time, and he was like a god. He never missed the ball, and he missed a ball, and we're going crazy. And then Favre threw this bomb at the last second, like a Hail Mary pass, and Sterling Sharp caught it, and we were just going crazy, bumping our chest way before it was popular. And he just couldn't believe it. He goes, "These guys really like football." That's my OJ.
It's like OJ was in the room. Are you surprised what happened later with the whole Nevada thing?
Oh, yeah. It's all the stuff that... the stuff plays out. You can't make this up of him writing a book on if I did it. That was just another thing he did. It was like he did a book on if he did do the murders, this is how he would do it. He actually wrote a book about that. And there are people, and it's like, okay, then he robbed a place, and then he wrote a book called If I Robbed It. No, he didn't. Kidding.
But right, for those who don't know, OJ got in trouble in Nevada.
Nevada
for,
with his own sports memorabilia. He's on. He got paroled, but he still has to serve, I think, 4 months.
I don't know, or
something.
Yeah, he I guess it was false imprisonment. He's trying to get his stuff back, and but guns were involved, I believe. And
yeah, I don't know the case of what happened, but I really believe that Nevada just cracked down and said, "We'll show you how it's done, California," because it was they didn't care who he was. They're taking this guy. He's going to jail. And he's been in prison now for 6 years or so.
When he comes out of prison, do you have anything you'd want to say to him?
No, I don't have contact with anybody in the trial, and I think it's best that way. And I'm sure I'll never see him, so I have nothing to say.
You think there was a defense curse? When you look at Johnny Cochran dying of cancer, you have Robert Shapiro's son passing away.
There's someone else also. I'm trying to think of.
And then there's Robert Kardashian. I mean, has that crossed your mind?
I think that, it's great. It's like a movie playing out, The Conjuring or something. We have these people dying from a defense trial, 10 little Indians. Everybody's going one by one. But no, I just think it was bad health.
So So it was just just a coincidence.
Yeah, it's a coincidence.
And did he get away with murder? Because there's this whole thing. I know you don't like talking about it, but
Did the show start?
No, what's this thing about the Post?
Oh, yeah, that's something that's that really upsets saying. Me. Yeah.
I mean, just the clear Post, the record on that.
Do you have it right in front of you?
Well, according to Cindy Adams, you reportedly said that the statute of limitations has now passed. This is in 2012. So mm-hmm. I can now say, yes, he did it.
Yeah. So this is something that I've never met this woman.
Cindy Adams.
I've never talked to the New York Post in my life, ever, that they can print this. And this caused me, honestly, it emotionally... I had reporters showing up. It really tears away at you. It was like I relived it from day one again. And I felt hatred from people because it was all over the news. And it didn't go away right away. 18 calls the morning. I had my phone. I turn it off. And then when you get messages, it just went crazy. I go, oh my God, something happened. So Harvey Levin calling me from TMZ. Harvey Levin saying, what's your defense? What do you have to say about this? And I had no idea what he was talking about.
Where did this come from? Just a man, literally from thin air.
Just came out. I'm driving myself crazy going, what in the world is she talking about? I've never met this person. And why would she say this?
Did you call her?
No. I went and I got a lawyer. And the job I was working with in Beverly Hills, I was doing a TV show at the time. And my owner said, I'm going to get you a lawyer. And Harvey Levin put me on. I didn't go on TMZ. I went on verbally. I went on the phone. And I said basically what I'm telling you, and yes, I'm pursuing it. And then Dr. Drew, and then I said, I don't do any more shows. And my boss said, just do Good Morning America. So your show goes up in, Jeremy's yawning at my store. But the show goes up in ratings. So I did this Good Morning
America. Who's your boss?
His name is Elky David, a terrific guy. He's a Greek billionaire. His family owns Coca-Cola.
Is he your manager?
No. He's a friend. I did his. He owns a network, like Oprah owns a network called Philmon. And I was doing a TV show called Tailgating with Cato. Great show. Not as good as yours, but a good show. Mine was on TV. I apologize.
We're tailgating. Right here. Hey, we're on TV.
My show actually put the tail in front. And anyway, so I did this and I explained the whole thing of, listen, I never met this person and I'm going to pursue the case. And financially now, it's costing too much to pursue the case. I believe there might have been a retraction. I don't know. But the point was, it didn't matter with the retraction or not. The damage was done. And it went from day one again that Cato is the biggest liar. And I had to live that where I never said a thing.
The thing about you, which is so fascinating, is that you're really the opposite of how you're portrayed. And getting to know you, it's like a shock. I'm serious. I mean, you're very funny. I mean, you know, and the way you interact with people live is really good. I mean, you're very talented.
Thanks.
And, you know, people don't understand. You had a lot of stuff going on before this OJ thing. You were really making some, good movement. You know, when you're early in your career, it's always tough. And you had starred in a film. You had a bunch of credits. You've been in a Coke commercial.
Well, I've been about three of those. But here's the best part of the story. Aaron Meyerson was one of my friends at the time of 93, 90s, a very close friend of mine. Aaron runs part of MTV now. Aaron gave me a script and he said, I want you in this movie. So I read the script and got to screen test for a film. And Aaron believed in me so much. The film's called Dumb and Dumber. And I read for the Jeff Daniels role. And I got through Rick Montgomery casting and the Farrelly Brothers' first movie. My life changed. That was in May. Doing this reading, it was the week before the merge, June. And that was it. Never heard from him again. But I got that far in the career of making something happen. I went to an academy for 7 years and everything, I became this a person that people wanted to meet just to meet Cato. I was a caricature of myself.
What would you say for 7 years? I misunderstood. I didn't hear what exactly you said.
I went to acting academy for 7 years. I studied acting. I did.
Here in LA?
In LA.
Where were you studying?
At Creative Actors Academy. And it was I went there and Ivana Chubbuck, and you can check their IMDb, their credits of who that went under these people. They're really great acting coaches. But the point was, it was so hard to get to a certain level that everything just changed. So, and now it's like almost 20 years later, you know, it took a long time. It's like I froze part of my life of... being Cato. That's Cato. That's Cato. Can't have him for anything. Cato. Cato's going to play Cato, which is not a bad thing. I mean, I'm making a living. I'm very happy. But and I'm not downplaying two people that lost their life. I mean, that's what it's really, it was never about anybody else but them. But I think it became because of the media of portraying me or other people as this person that capitalizes on whatever he's doing. And it's not capitalizing, it's making a living. And I never became anything different. I didn't become a doctor or a lawyer. I didn't become other lawyers getting TV shows. I'm still that same guy from, you know, 93, 94, trying to my to get into acting, to do work, to, you know,
well,
pay
the
my
great,
mortgage.
The great thing about my experience with you is I am that guy on the street. I'm the guy who watched Leno make fun of, you know, go into all the stereotypes. I'm the guy who first met you, only knowing you from the OJ trials, coming in with perceptions mm-hmm. that have been, I've been programmed. And that's what's so fascinating about getting to know you is how completely different you are. And it would just take people a few minutes to spend time with you. And I think they would see who you are.
Right.
I mean, we just spent a few minutes together here before the show and you were cracking me up, you know, and this is you.
Right.
This is not anything else but you. Jeremy, get on there. Talk to me. Didn't you have fun hanging out with Cato downtown?
Say that one more time.
So didn't you have fun hanging out with Cato downtown?
I had a great time. That was great.
Yeah, I mean,
Cato, you're envious of his confidence. He just hops right in there, and there's these lovely ladies sitting at a table at a restaurant, and he has them giggling in a second.
Right, but and the thing is, and you can go now. We can hear your
okay.
air conditioner. Thank you.
who was that?
That was Jeremy. He runs the place, and we hung out. We had a good, Cato came a bit early, not too much early, just perfect, where we could take a little walk around downtown, and you're just funny, you know? And
yeah.
It's like, and I did have a chance to meet you with, we have a mutual friend, Dan Frisch, who I want to thank for introducing me to you.
And Dan's a great guy.
Yeah, he is. And I know Dan's one of those lifelong friends. He knew you, or LA friends who knew you before, I believe, right?
Dan and I are over 20 years friendship.
Yeah, so... You guys were just friends, and then boom, he sees his friend involved in this crazy mm-hmm. story. So the question is, was the trial a blessing or a curse? And I know you, like you said, some people died. It's no one wants that. But as far as your own personal life, you said you've had some time that's been frozen, yet we are walking down the street. People are recognizing you. So is it just a combination of both as far as your own career goes?
Well, I think it's a double-edged sword. There's good and there's bad. And I think if anything, my whole life has been, to look at the light. I really am. I hate dark, and I hate any kind of hate. And I always stress this because that's what this is the way I was raised. I was always around a loving family, and I hate seeing violent acts. And I've always been, I think if anything, I was portrayed as this, you know, people come up to me even today going, when they mention the trial, they go, you're the one bright spot in a trial. And I don't know if that's a compliment or not. I'm thinking it's a double homicide, but I'm the bright spot. But I think they're not downplaying the murders. They're just saying, we could relate to you, Cato. And I was myself during the testifying. I was, like I said, I was nervous, but I answered to things. And when people laughed at certain lines, it wasn't a planned out thing. It's the way I would answer that question. And I think that's part of the reason why I stood out in a trial as a witness. And
well, yeah, because you were real and you weren't buttoned down and pre-programmed and packaged. You just were yourself. And I don't think people are used to that.
Yeah. And with that too, and even today in 2013 and 14, I really love people, and when people spit at me and put things in my hair back in the day, I didn't really hate them. I was just like, oh man,
I can't believe. Are you being dramatic?
No,
or people were literally spitting at you.
Oh my, spitting at me, always wanted to fight me, and
for what?
Exactly, that's what I was thinking. Like what? I mean, I would, you know, I'm not gonna cry a lot, but I was depressed.
Were you crying?
I got really upset a few times, and people would just look at me and go, "You're the biggest loser. You are a liar. You're this in my face." And
did you have to go to therapy over this?
No, I did. Yeah. My therapy was my friends, and people would ask me, "You need therapy? If you ever need a doctor, I've got a friend." And I said, "No, I don't. I do phone calls. I called my family a lot. I hung out with my best friends." to this day, you know, they were high school friends. They're still my best friends today. And I think that's the probably what made me, you know, very humbled, because at one point I really couldn't go off for a year, and it would be going to events where the funny thing was, I went to events like the Indy 500, the Kentucky Derby. I didn't ask for security. I had 9 guys, and one time I had to be lifted up because I had such a mob around me. And at the time, I had a publicist who had the Michael Jackson, and he goes, he's never seen anything like this. And I was kind of cracking him. I'm a witness in this trial. And if I could only relate to you, I was this guy who was a witness, like a rock star without the talent.
Did you get off on it at all? I mean, isn't there something kind of cool about people wanting to know who you are and being recognized, even if it's not?
You know, you saw me out in the street today.
Yeah.
I was just like that exact same guy. So you could say I'm that guy because of the trial. No, it's the way I am, of me going up to people like that. The bad part was that they recognized me immediately, and it was never forced by me, but I could see people going, he's just doing that because he's on TV. Mm. And I had so many people come up to me that guys that were just people that you really understand what hate is about when you're famous. You see hate and you have guys going, you know, enjoy your 15 minutes, loser. Or like I said, I had these concerts I'd go to sometimes that would be, first of all, I knew I shouldn't go, but my friends go, just go. And I had these girls that took all these, one thing, they poured beers on my head. Then I had a thing where a girl took these, would run by with lollipops that were very popular, and they'd stick them in my hair. And I was going, is this really happening?
This is with the long hair?
This is semi-long, you know. The long hair in the trial, I look at that picture and I go, I don't remember my hair actually being that long. I think it was the way I was sitting or crotched. It was like, that's pretty long.
Yeah. Did you ever have death threats?
Yeah, I had death threats. I had quite a few death threats. I had a radio show. I'd get death threats all the time. I had to have security the first 3 months because of death threats.
What a waste. I mean, no offense to you.
Yeah.
If you've got someone you want to take out.
Vic, I'll tell you, when I was driving my car in the 90s sometimes.
What did you do to deserve that? Nothing.
I'd pull up and then my car, if I was at a stoplight, I'd try not to look. I would have people knocking their window, either flip me off. And by the way, people love me too. It wasn't just all hate, but the hate is what you remember. 90 people love you. One person out of the 91 love you, and the one person, so you remember, is that one person. It's so true. That saying is, that one person hates me. And still to this day, I get little tweets of, Cato's the biggest freeloader. But I'm turning that in my favor, being a freeloader and a slacker.
How are you doing that?
How am I doing that? I'm doing that with a woman.
Before you go, I'm totally interrupting you.
Okay.
But the truth is, you've never been a freeloader.
No. Not at all. Or a slacker.
What you're taking advantage of is...
Of the people saying that about me.
Of this perception.
Exactly. To this day, I still get the tweets or comments on different social medias of being a loser and a freeloader. And I met a woman I did a show with back in 1995 or so. Her name is Rhonda Shear, and she's wonderful. Rhonda had a show called Up All Night, and it was a comedy show. It was sort of like an Elvira, and she did very comical things. So I did a movie before the trial called Beach Fever, and Rhonda, we did this show together, the entire thing. We did this comedy, and our friendship grew from that over like 19 years ago. Anyways, I went to the Playboy Mansion. I've been a friend of Hef's now for 18 years. And it was the Midsummer Nights. It was the biggest party of the year, and a lot of naked people walking around. It was actually just painted models, and which is good for me because I finger paint. But seriously, Jeremy, wake up. Jeremy heard something about a boob and a vagina. He's like, what, Cato? Boob, vagina, put me back on the mic. I can turn the air conditioner off. Boobs, vagina, Cato. So Rhonda saw me and goes, Cato, you look the same. And I said, Rhonda, you look beautiful. You're the same. And she was with the people at her company called Rhonda Shear Enterprises. I'll make this quick. She's on Home Shopping Network, which I don't watch. 93 million people do every day. Mm-hmm. Rhonda invented something called the AHH bra, A-H-H bra. And this bra has got her to be the Entrepreneur of the Year 3 years in a row by Ernst & Young. She's in Forbes magazine about being an entrepreneur. She became a mogul. sold millions and millions, became very, very wealthy. She said, Katie, we should do a line for you. And not a drug line, please. There goes Jeremy again. I'll do the coke. Jeremy, no drugs. So she goes, a clothing line. I said, okay, what's your idea? She was asking me if I had an idea. And I said, you know what? It'd be kind of funny to do a thing that I'm always accused of being this guy living on couches and all that. Why don't we do Kato couch potato wear? And her executives that were at the party, I could see they had a little twinkle in their eyes. And I said, yeah, we do a thing with an extra pocket. The extra pocket, you could have just Doritos, Fritos, and Cheetos. If it ends in O, you should be wearing Kato's. And they loved it even more. And then I said, when you can finally afford to live on your own couch, it's time to wear Kato's. And it got bigger and bigger and bigger. And now we are in the designing stages. And we're going to make this thing happen. And I approve the design. And there's, you know, one of the clothing outfits is this... it's a for the remote. It says remote. So the guys go and they put the remote in their pants. And
so what kind of clothes are these? Is this
it's loungewear. Loungewear that you can actually watch a football game, sleep in it, and still go out to the store and buy milk and beer.
So it's like you'd wear it at home and out.
Yeah.
Home and out. Pajamas though.
That's one of the lines also, and they're called pajamos.
Like Kato?
End and O.
Everything's got end and O.
End and O. All my friends, by the way. Harpo, Chico, and Oprah.
So when would we be able to purchase this?
It'll probably be 6 months from now.
A lot of what you do also is hosting, correct?
Yeah, I love hosting.
And
I was born to be a host, Vic. You know what? I know that you were very tight with a guy named Howie Mandel. I was born to be a game show host watching it. It's been my career to always want to be a host, and it's because I really do like listening and I love people. Hosting is the most wonderful. I did comedy and hosting is what I should always just do, not the middle act or anything. Just be the host, the MC, because that's where I shine.
Well, I agree. You're very talented, and I could see you doing that and being very successful at it. What are you doing to pursue that? You have been hosting some things, haven't you?
Yeah, I know. We mentioned this other person, Elkie David. I did 140 shows there. It was on DirecTV and Dish Network, and it's all over the world. It's been 46 different cities.
What is that show?
It's called Tailgating with Kato. Now, I'm done with that, and from that, a company saw me do that show and they hired me for my the Kato Kaelin show. It started as Kato's Corner, and that's a talk show. And I do a monologue, have the guest on. The guests are not the A-list, but they're the B-list people. But they're A-list to me. You're C, so you can't do my show.
How dare you?
No, I'm kidding.
How dare me, C?
Oh my God, you're A, baby. You're
that
A.
That really
hurts. You're the V train.
You dropped that bomb on me, right? How dare you? My listeners are...
No, Vic's the best.
Very offended.
Vic is the best. So that's the show I've been doing. And I did we were talking about it when you take a walk in the street.
Where's this airing? The Kato Kaelin show.
The Kato Kaelin show doesn't air until October. It'll air on any smart TV. And smart TV, you know what that is.
I know what a smart car is.
Yes, well...
I know what a smartphone is. What's a smart TV?
Smart TV is like a smartphone. You can get your Google, your Apple, your connected to any of the TV sources that are out there right now. 66% of people cut the cord and now watch everything in their iPad or their
phone. So this is a network online?
Well, it's run by a guy who started a company called Image Entertainment. Image Entertainment is probably on every Blu-ray disc that you ever see. And that's Martin Greenwald. So Martin runs the company. And he touches stuff that becomes golden. So
this show is going to be coming out in October.
Yeah.
And how are we going to find it?
There should be a complete ad campaign going for it. Nothing will be done until this. It all works through apps. You have to have an app. Go to Apple. You go to Google. And it'll say the Kato Kaelin show.
Okay.
It's a lot like my Film On show. It was on Direct and Dish, but also bigger on your iPhone.
So you're going to do a monologue and then you're going to have one guest?
I shot my 18 shows.
That's it.
Well, 18, then I do another 18 probably start in October.
How did that feel?
It's wonderful. The show is really good. It's because of the show, a lot of other doors have opened up because I'm sending out the tapes that I've had. And, I'm working and it's pretty consistent of things that are going on. And tomorrow from this, I go, I got called in from a network. They want to see me. And I'll put together a show idea. They wanted to do a Kato show of some sort. So it's sort of like work begets work.
I
never stop writing. I never stop, you know.
When you had a stand-up act, were you writing your own stuff? Or were you working, collaborating with others to get an act together?
In the 90s, when the trial came out, I was with Louis Anderson. And he had writers for me. And
so you were like a team? You were opening for him?
Yeah, I did a few cities, and then it wasn't my voice. I didn't think it had nothing to do with Louis. Louis is fantastic, and his writers are great. I found the voice where I'm at now, of me sort of like.
You're very in the moment.
Yeah, you know? I think that's what it is. It's a, you know, my stuff is sort of like self-deprecating or starting. I've got monologues on my phone that I do. I always start it with, you know, like, you know, real beauty, by the way, is on the inside. At least that's what all the ugly people tell me. Hey, we got a really good show. And then I go into the whole thing and stop it, Cato, no more.
Now, what else have you been doing? Like, have you found that it's been hard to make a living over the 20 years because of this perception?
No, I think I've been kind of blessed with that. I've had some great jobs. One of the jobs was being a radio show, and that was a great one, to being the and KLSX following Howard Stern at the time. But another one was, we talked about, you didn't know I had this court show.
We talked about this prior to you coming on, this court show, yeah.
A court show called Eye for an Eye. And the best part about the show was this, that I did 140 episodes. It aired all over the world and everywhere in America on every affiliate. And I would travel and meet all the affiliates. People would see me in the airport and go, as soon as I knew, they go, we love that one episode. That trial stuff was always going to be there, but it got lower on the ladder, and more people were recognizing me from that show, and it was a very, very big with the college crowd.
What you may not realize, and I'm gonna teach you something, Cato. Mm-hmm. I want you to listen closely. Okay, you listening?
Do I have to pull your finger?
No.
Oh, good.
There is an audience out there, whether you like it or not, doesn't know who you are. Before I came here, I was at Starbucks, and I was asking people, who is Cato Kaelin? Now, these people were mostly in their 20s, poorly educated, could not speak English.
By the way, this is Skid Row Studios.
No, but I talked to Cato, this is important. I'm giving you some great hope.
I got to tell you something after the story.
And this is true. There are a lot of people who don't know you, mm-hmm. and they're going to discover you, and maybe their parents would say, oh, that's that guy. But that doesn't matter if that's ever been a hindrance. And some of those people will watch you too. But you have an opportunity. This time passing is actually a good thing for you.
Oh, I 100% agree. 100% agree, because that thing that happened is, it's the cards that I had to play to get where I'm at. It's sort of like, this is what just going to happen to you, Cato, in your life. So there's nothing you can do. You deal with it. So I've dealt with it. And once again, I haven't stopped pursuing what I'm doing, and I'm doing it there. And you know, you mentioned Starbucks today, and that's how my day started. Today, I'm in Starbucks in the morning, going there. It's a woman in line, and she's choking, and everybody's freaking out. But within moments, they opened up another register, so things were good. Joke out there.
That was just a joke. Correct? We were doing so well, Harpo, Chico. This interview is going so well.
I had to do that one for the
say, leave him on your strongest.
I did.
I did. Well, we're almost out of time, but if people want to reach you, how do they do that?
Well, you know, I end every show. And this show, to me, has been enlightening. And I end every show that I do with a phrase of, don't believe what you hear, recognize what you see, and be a moth and chase the light. That's how I end every show. So I'm ending your show with that too. Be a moth, chase the light.
We're not quite done. How can they find you?
Oh, Twitter, Cato, @Cato_Kaelin, KAELIN. Facebook, Instagram, which is my modeling agency. I'm with Instagram. No filter. Anyways, okay, it's Heffy. Anyways, that's how you find me, Cato_Kaelin, KAELIN.
And again, you can Google him. You're going to find a ton of stuff on Google and YouTube. I just want to thank you so much for, again, taking the time, because I know you are busy. You've been constantly out of town working. Thank you for taking the time.
Glad I did.
I am thrilled you did. And I learned a lot. So thank you. Just a reminder, Cato, and all of you listening, you can subscribe to my show on iTunes, where you can also download past episodes. And it's all free. See you next week right here on Vic Cohen's It's a Fair Question. I'm Vic Cohen, and it's a fair question. It's a fair question. It's a fair question. I'm Vic Cohen, and it's a fair question. It's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair question. I'm Vic Cohen, and it's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair question.